Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 14 of the Ball 5 podcast, the podcast that had a cold open planned already heading into this, but I found something on Twitter. Chris, unfortunately, I think you're already hip to this. I wanted this to be a surprise for you, but I'm still going to share it on the screen anyway. We're recording on Saturday night, a box score between the Chattanooga Lookouts and the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Now, if you don't know, in the minor leagues, when there's a doubleheader, they still do the 2020 rules. I don't know how far back this dates, but it's been there. It's been like this for a while. They still do 2020 rules, seven-inning doubleheaders. Now, this doesn't really matter for most things. Minor league baseball is minor league baseball. Sometimes it, you know, you don't want to be there for 18 innings. However, what makes it sometimes very interesting is when you get a game like this. Now, Chris, do you notice anything about this box score that is maybe off?
The only thing I notice is the Chattanooga Lookouts, which I think is still the Cincinnati Reds organization. I could be wrong. Probably should have looked it up.
In my research, I did find out that they are the affiliate of the Reds. I forget who the Trash Pandas are.
Yeah, but the biggest thing to me is that a Reds team won. So.
That's fair. The Reds did win. Now, the Reds major league team was on the very opposite end of something similar to this. Another thing you might notice is that in the hits column, there are zero for the Chattanooga Lookouts. That's right. The Chattanooga Lookouts won 7-5. This wasn't like a 1-0 win.
No.
Where they had like a sack fly and got no hit. They won 7-0 off of a seventh inning to take the win over the Rocket City Trash Pandas. Now, I want to go over this inning. I have the details of the inning, so here's how it went down. In the seventh inning, it started walk, walk, fly out to the second baseman, walk, strike out, walk, E8, hit by pitch, hit by pitch, hit by pitch, walk, hit by pitch, strike out. Now, the most interesting part about this is they had two outs with the bases loaded and nobody scored.
Yeah, they did all their damage with two outs.
The first two people get on by a walk, then a fly out to the second baseman, one out, runners on first and second, whatever. You walk the third, getting a little hairy, but you get the strikeout. Most important thing is to get that strikeout for the second out. Now you get two outs, you walk in the run, whatever. You're up five, at this point you're up 3-1. Still doable. And then the E8, I believe, was a 3-run error. So had to be colossal. Just an insane mess up on the center fielder here. And then from there, I feel like the wheels go off because we have hit by pitch, hit by pitch, hit by pitch, which I believe that would then drive in the runner that reached on the E8 and then score another one. And then a walk, another hit by pitch. And all of a sudden we have a 7-run inning without a hit.
We might have to see truly how far our MLB TV, MILB TV hookup works.
We do have access to this
game. Because if we can watch this inning, that's got to be something.
We have not gotten into YouTube yet, but I think that this would be a fascinating look to start off by going into recapping the seventh inning. Now, one thing I mentioned earlier is that the Reds were on the flip side of this. This is because the actual real-life MLB Reds last year lost a game where they pitched a no-hitter to the Pittsburgh Pirates, if you'll remember. So, at the very least, they finally got one of their own, but I just wanted to start off with that. That is one of the most fascinating box scores I've ever seen. It is so minor league baseball, it's unbelievable from the seven innings because there's a doubleheader, and the second game is going on currently. Rocket City is up 3-0. They're up 3-0 in the bottom of the fifth. It's worthy to note that they were up 3-0 in the bottom of the fifth in the first game. Looking at it, Chattanooga does have one hit. They are one hitting the Chattanooga Lookouts right now. So I will keep my eye on this. I have it up on game day. I will keep my eye on this. I will give you an update if this goes final in the next two innings. But that was not the initial point. This is just a huge tangent that I wanted to get off because it was so funny looking at it. The real point of this video is that baseball is back. We released our last pod on the day of opening day. So in that time, we've had about a week and a half or so of baseball. Like I said, we're recording on Saturday night. This will probably go up on Monday because tomorrow's Easter. So I won't be doing anything to get that up on tomorrow. But yeah, baseball is back. Chris, any general feels? Any general excitement about baseball being back?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, it's just been awesome being able to watch at least, you know, a game or two every single day. Games have been quick, which is a blessing and a curse. I say blessing and a curse because it's actually been pretty nice. I think the pacing has actually felt very real. But it's just a curse because I love just sitting there being a degenerate and like falling asleep to a baseball game. So yeah. Like it's a you know, it's part of it is part of the allure of this one thing that I always loved is that when people say, oh, baseball watching is boring, baseball watching is boring, to me that's kind of the point, you know. Baseball is the perfect thing to watch while you're doing something else. I'm always a huge caveat for that. That's why I like the radio so much. I have noticed the radio games are a little bit wonky because, but they do still get, you know, their little stories and diatribes in, but it's not as long flowing as they used to be. So,
yeah, and I haven't listened to anything on the radio yet, just to, you know, I probably will start now that, you know, I'm going to be driving home during games and stuff like that. So I probably will start catching games on the radio, but yeah, as far as the pace goes, and I'm going to get to this when we get to our part later on in the episode, but it has been fun. It's been, you know, a nice change of pace where it's almost one thing where I don't even, unless there's actively a pitch clock violation happening, I'm barely even noticing that it's going on. You know, it just kind of feels like the game I've been watching, except after an hour, I look up and it's already the fifth inning. Which is, I think, exactly what you wanted for this rule change, for it just to not really go against the actual action happening on the field, but instead, you know, enhancing that action that's happening on the field by taking away a lot of the downtime. And I understand that baseball is a lot of that downtime and the charm of it, but regardless, I think it's very exciting and a welcome change, I would say. Overall, in the beginning of the season, I know that, you know, obviously you have a very busy life, but what other teams other than the Mets have you been really trying to catch? Because I have had some teams that I've been prioritizing early in the season because I find them to be exciting watches. But are there any other teams that you've kind of been prioritizing?
Not really. I think what I mainly do when I'm trying to watch other teams is I'll try to find like a pitcher that I'm interested in watching, just because that's usually where my interests lie. So I have been watching, we'll talk about them later, but I have been watching some Jeffrey Spring starts because he's been really good, so far. Also keying in on Jacob DeGrom, first start was kind of a dud, second start was a little bit better. So yeah, I'm really just kind of trying to nail in on, pitchers that I really like, particularly my fantasy pitchers, but I like to watch them just to kind of keep an eye and see, you know, if there's anything that I see wrong. Get my real scouting going,
and especially yeah, you're really checking. Is Jacob DeGrom's velo down? I gotta send a report to Bruce Bochy. Bruce, I think the TV angles not helping us very much. We got to look into that. You had the added bonus of that second Jacob DeGrom start being Grayson Rodriguez's first start. You mentioned great pitching. That was a very entertaining. I was at work, so I couldn't really watch it. But regardless, I heard it was very entertaining, and he looked pretty solid there. I've been prioritizing some West Coast baseball, to be honest, because that's one of the perks of these later games is that I can tune in at 10:10 and not, you know, I'll be able to go to bed at like midnight and the game's done. So I've been watching a lot of Mariners. They've had a couple series with the Guardians that were pretty fun to watch. Right now I'm tuning in to some Dodgers Diamondbacks. I've been trying to watch a little bit more of the Diamondbacks this season just because of how exciting I thought they were. You know, heading into the season with guys like Corbin Carroll and Alec Thomas and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, just in general, been trying to hop around, catch as many of the different games I can. I was watching a bit of Padres Braves earlier today. But yeah, I think that's mainly the focus that I've been having with the new rules is catching up on some West Coast baseball that I don't often get the opportunity to watch because I am very tired around this time of night. But regardless, so with the first week pretty much under, you know, done, I wanted to go through some, we're not going to do like overreactions, I would say, because I just find those to be kind of, I don't want to say lazy, but it's just one of those things where I am a big proponent of let's try to not overreact or, you know, look into anything too big until like May. Now we say this now, we're going to get into the Mets part later on where we'll probably overreact, but still, I try to stay as measured as I possibly can until around May, but it's the beginning of the season. Your sample sizes aren't too big, but I wanted to start off this year by doing, you know, just a quick, like, one thing that we really liked about this first week, one thing we maybe didn't like already, and then a surprise for the first week. So, Chris, do you want to get us kicked off with our favorite thing?
Yeah, you know, I do want to bring up, and admittedly, this is another one, like you had mentioned, where you don't really want to overreact, you know, because there has been at least one not so great team. But the Milwaukee Brewers start has been really cool to me this year, mainly because they're doing it all with the guys that you probably wouldn't have thought. You know, I mean, they're pitching. It is some of the usual suspects. You know, you do have Brandon Woodruff is still pitching well. Freddie Peralta has been pitching well, and then their bullpen, you know, between Devin Williams and everyone else has been pitching really well. But then the other guys that you would think, you know, your Corbin Burnes, he hasn't really factored into any wins in a major way. Wade Miley just blanked the Mets. So that's another one that's kind of like an out of left field person. And then all of their young people are really keying in. Except for Brian Anderson, who is also killing it right now. You know, Brian Anderson so far on the young season has 3 home runs in 27 plate appearances in 7 games, batting a cool .500. I just think, you know, it's really cool to see. And granted, again, that's just 3 hot games, because I think he may have hit all 3 of those home runs against the Mets.
I believe so, yes.
So maybe it's not saying much. But going into other ones, you know, you have Joey Weimer, Garrett Mitchell, Bryce Tarang, all going into really, really, really hot starts to start off their careers, too. So it's really exciting to see some really younger guys get the opportunity to play and then go on with it. Now, the issue with this is that it is the Brewers. So this is probably them being like, oh, shit, we have some young guys that we got in good trades and grew and everything. So we're not going to piece anything around them. You know, we're just going to kind of grow them off the pasture until we, you know, stay a back of the wild card 500 team for the rest of the season. But for now, they are, I believe they are, what is it?
They're 6-1 currently.
Yeah, 6-1.
Probably at the very least by the end of the night, 6-2. This is a bad timing to record because they're currently down 6-0 to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Well,
but you did mention it, and that's what I wanted to get to, is it hasn't really been their big names so far this season. Rowdy Tellez hit a homer against the Mets, but overall has been struggling, hitting 143. William Contreras off to a slow start. Christian Yelich is just, once again, don't want to overreact, but also we've had 3 years of sample size now of this, and this is going on the 4th year in the sample size of just Christian Yelich hasn't been there post all of his injuries and just not really being able to get the ball up in the air. So, you know, it sucks, but it truly is like all the only like regular you would consider that would be a fixture in this lineup that has a OPS plus so far over 100 is Willy Adames, and it's only at 105. You're looking at, once again, Bryce Tarang, 155 OPS plus. Brian Anderson, 315 OPS plus. Garrett Mitchell, 213 OPS plus. Had that walk-off against the Mets, as well as, I believe, hit his other 2 homers against them as well. And then, once again, Joey Weimer off to a solid start. Yeah, I mean, it's overall a solid team. I do think that bullpen, Devin Williams aside, has a lot of question marks, as we may have mentioned during our team preview. So I do wonder how this team finds its level, you know, what that level ends up becoming. But it's always nice to get off to a start like this early in the season. You know, it being able to really assert yourself going on early in the year. And hopefully those young guys keep going on. I know that Milwaukee has a pretty decent track record for development. And, I mean, they did make developments with Christian Yelich before the injuries that turned him into this MVP. So, you know, hopefully they're able to continue on with that. I like that pick. As far as my favorite thing, bit of a cop-out, but I'll start off by saying, you know, just all the newness. I'm a big fan. I'm a sucker. I see a guy that's wearing a new jersey, and it blows my mind. Like, right now I'm watching Noah Syndergaard for the Dodgers face Lourdes Gurriel Jr. for the Diamondbacks, and it's really, you know, firing off all my synapses here. I just like seeing people in new jerseys. But yeah, it's just, you know, all the newness. You see new rules, new players in new places, new changes to stadiums. We've seen this. We haven't seen Toronto debut their new walls yet in a game, but we saw the new wall in Comerica Park. I noticed that they just built it in front of the old wall. They didn't even tear down the old one. New stuff like the new screen at the Met Stadium, that's absolutely gigantic. And then, yeah, you know, just in general, newness. I like newness. But if I have to pick a specific thing, I will say that it was really, really cool getting to see Andrew McCutchen make his return to Pittsburgh, finally playing a home game in the home opener for Pittsburgh. I believe he led off their half of the inning. And they, you know, the umps, good on them, did not enforce a very strict pitch clock for this introduction. They let him get his standing ovation and not have to take like a ball on the pitch timer because he was saluting the crowd. So yeah, I mean, it's just really cool. We talk about like homecomings and stuff like that, and Miggy's gonna have a lot of it this year. He already had some of it with his first last home opener this weekend. So I think it's just really cool, and I'm gonna be excited to watch that Pittsburgh team a lot more this year, especially because of guys like McCutchen.
Yeah. Taking a first ball violate or first strike violation to get a standing ovation is going to be the new like shot clock violation to start the game when you have when you're doing like a memory.
Kobe passed
or something
away and they took an 8-second violation and a 24-second violation to start the game.
Well, I think they've done it for other ones, but sure, yes, exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. I want to say that that's something that some teams will do for other things.
I don't think so. I think it was mainly just because Kobe wore 8 and 24. I've mentioned this to you before, but I'll tell this story on the podcast. When the day he passed, I was playing 2K that night. And when you play 2K online, there were kids online taking an 8-second shot clock violation, which in some respects is, I guess, cute because they don't have the ability to do it. I have my own thoughts on Kobe that I you know, I don't want to get into, obviously, just because this is a very quick turnaround, but regardless, I just wanted to mention that it was funny that even on 2K, kids were taking like 8-second and 24-second shot clock violations. God, that went off the rails. Onto our last, our least favorite thing. My least favorite thing is how I just got into that. What has been your least favorite thing of the week so far?
And it was really quick because it was only one day, but I think my least favorite thing is the handling of Tyler O'Neill by the Cardinals. I don't really know what the Cardinals are doing in this case, you know. So for the short of it here, the Cardinals thought that he was kind of dogging a play, and admittedly he was. He really probably had a good opportunity to score on that one, and he kind of ran it out like he thought there was two outs and that he was going to be dead at the plate anyways. He probably could have put in a little bit more effort there, but they ended up benching him the next day. And there was a lot kind of out in the open where the Cardinals said specifically that they didn't like his effort and that they were going to bench him and they'll see what they'll do for the rest of the week. And then Tyler O'Neill had some things to say, saying that he felt really kind of betrayed and that, you know, he thought that these things were supposed to be done behind closed doors and everything. So it was just a little bit of drama, you know. There's not normally that much drama in baseball, so when you see it, you have to kind of key into it. The thing is that, you know, Tyler O'Neill is a young player. He's a good player. I didn't realize, I'm looking at his baseball reference here. I completely forgot that he played 61 games in 2018. So he was there, you know, for about a little under half the season, in 2018. You know, but he's a good player, a good promising player, you know, really good, power speed combo, good prospect. And it's just, going to be interesting to kind of see, what the Cardinals do here. You know, is this going to be a ship him at the deadline because you don't like his attitude type thing? And the biggest issue with this is that the Cardinals are usually right with these things. So I'm hoping that they're not right in here, but yeah, I just really don't love, this whole, how they're treating Tyler O'Neill. So,
yeah, I think that O'Neill made a good point that it's something that you could definitely get on him for. I don't know about the benching. It's, you know, kind of up to you whether or not you want to do that, but the whole kind of taking it out in the open thing does kind of feel like not a, I won't necessarily say a betrayal of trust. I think that's maybe a little too dramatic to get into it like that, because at the end of the day, it's a small thing. It's one game, but it's not something you want to know that your manager, your boss, in a sense, is going out to the media behind your back and saying stuff like that. I'm sure they had their own conversations about it before that, but still, you know, it's definitely not what you want to hear. As far as the play, it didn't look like a particularly good send in the first place, so I almost kind of understand him dogging it. I mean, maybe not. Maybe you want to slide, make it a little closer to rush the throw, but it wasn't like the greatest send of all time that was like a surefire he was going to score if he was hustling.
Yeah. And it's interesting because with benches like that, like, you normally see them on, like, someone dogging it to first or someone, you know, dogging it in the field or anything like that. I've never really seen it on, like, a questionable send like that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's almost like the third base coach was trying to save face or something like that, and he got in the coach's ear about it or something. Like, he was trying to say, like, look, I knew he had speed. I knew to send him. Because that is the thing, is that Tyler O'Neill is a fast guy, you know, so maybe there's a little bit more effort there. But also, beginning of the season, you know, it's just, it's an interesting situation. So I just think that they handled it incorrectly. And again, like you said, you know, the on paper loss is one game. It is what it is. You know what I mean? That's not that big of a deal. But the behind the scenes, everything else behind it, that just goes into so much more. It's this whole Corbin Burns thing that we're seeing, although he's not really doing much with it, but it's this whole Corbin Burns thing with how there's kind of a public arbitration battle and stuff. Like, you know, it's this behind the door stuff that open up the avenue for new things in the future. So we'll see what they do.
Yeah, definitely. At the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be too bad, but I do see that it wasn't very fun. My least favorite thing is that we've already had two Tungsten Armo Doyle games. If you're not familiar, I'll just read the tweet out. Shout out to Matomic, who tweeted, "Every time I see an Angels highlight, it's like Mike Trout hit 3 home runs and raised his average to .528, while Shohei Ohtani did something that hasn't been done since Tungsten Armo Doyle of the 1921 Akron Groomsmen, as the Tigers defeated the Angels 8-3. And we've already had two of them this year. Now, the first one was on opening day against the A's, of all people. Now, this one, I wanted to watch it because I wanted to watch Shohei, but also I was like, it's the A's. I don't really want to watch the A's right now, especially when Guardians, Mariners is on, so I didn't watch it. And I saw that Shohei Ohtani's outing was the 26th since at least 1901 with 10-plus strikeouts and no runs on opening day. It's the first time that the pitcher's team lost that game. And Shohei Ohtani got a hit in that game, too. And then the most recent one, this was a little bit of a... This was on Friday's game. This is a little bit of a like, super arbitrary stat, but I'll roll with it. Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani were the first two former MVPs to record an extra base hit in a game and have none of their other teammates record a hit in the same game. And they lost that game. Mike Trout hit a home run. Shohei Ohtani hit a double and walked. And then they did not have anybody else record a hit and lost the game to the Blue Jays 4-3. It's just, the thing is that the Angels right now are 4-3. So they're not even off to like a terrible start. they've been fine, especially in the West where teams like the Astros have been slow to get started. It's not the end of the world, but it's just one of those things. It's like, come on, man. It's like the Mets with injuries. It's one of those things that you're just, even if things are seemingly different, you're never going to be able to change that, that reputation, because the moment anything happens that's along those lines, people will just associate it with you.
Oh, 110%. You know, and I'm glad you even brought up the Mets thing. Obviously, we see it from a more personal angle there, but it is crazy, like, how every single season, oh, that's the Mets, you know what I mean? And you're like, dude, I don't need to hear this, you know? I'm just thinking about how tasty that Tungsten Armour Doyle tweet is going to be when the Mets beat them 4-3 in the World Series in Game 4 and sweep them there.
Oh yeah, I forgot to ask. I forgot that I was gonna ask this. Do you want any addendum on your pick?
I'm doubling down. I'm not happy about it because both teams have.
You're not happy about it. I'm giving you an out.
I'm not taking it. I'm a person of my own word here. I'm dying by the sword, as it will.
Fine. This is an incredibly weird hill to die on, but I respect you for doing so. Do you have a surprise?
Yeah, my surprise, and this is something. So it was really funny because I was choosing it because I was listening to the Mets game and they brought up that there is one team that still has not lost yet. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is going to be my surprise for the podcast. Because it is the Rays. The Rays are 8-0 right now, I believe. Yes, the Rays are 8-0. And playing
God, this
wonderful
is
going to
age like milk if they lose tomorrow.
The really funny piece, though, is that so already gearing in saying, you know, this is a surprise. We know the Rays are the Rays, but they're kind of killing it right now, and they're hitting very well. They're pitching really well. And then I looked at who they beat, and it's the Detroit Tigers, Washington Nationals, and Oakland Athletics. So yeah. This isn't really that crazy of a start. Although this has been a historic start, I did read something that it's one of the first times that something like this has been done to this scale, for a very long time. But it was just very funny. But the good part of it, Wander Franco is playing really well. He has 3 homers so far, 2 stolen bases. He's hitting for a high average, and it's the nice stuff to be able to see from Franco, and they're being led by Wander Franco, Randy Arozarena, and then players kind of down the list, Josh Lau, I forget which one that one is.
So I believe that the only Lau is Brandon.
Okay.
Josh and Nathaniel are both Lau because I believe they're brothers.
All right, cool. But then further down the line, we have, Josh Lowe and Jose Siri, really bringing it up with their bats, playing really well, too. And then their pitching has just been world class. Jeffrey Springs, has hardly given up a hit the past few. He carried a no-hitter a few innings the first game, I believe. I believe he exited with no hits. And then the next game, he pitched really well again. So. It's just really cool to see that. McClanahan's been good. Rasmussen's been good. Even Zach Eflin has been pitching all right. So, their pitching is good out there. Their hitting is really good out there. It's just really funny to rattle off the teams that they've faced.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to mention because I listened to the Cespedes Family Barbecue Barbacast that dropped on Friday. And it's a lot of kind of these points where, like, a lot of the guys that have been going off are, Jake Bent said it, are, like, guys that you would expect to hit very well against bad pitching. So I'm sure it'll come down to its level. And at the end of the day, winning 8 in a row, 9 in a row, no, actually, right now 8 in a row, hopefully 9 by the time we post this, or else it won't be as much of a surprise. It's still difficult, regardless of who you face. You could be facing a AAA team, and if you give them 10 tries, they might beat you once. But it is still a very low level of competition. I just want to notice, and we do, this guy has been on the Rays for a while, but they have a reliever named Calvin Fauché, or Faucher, whatever, which just, he very much sounds like an author that you would have had to read in, like, the seventh grade. Like, he's
going for Chaucer.
Yes. Oh, yes. Gregory Chaucer. Maybe that's why I have it. But Calvin Fauché, I believe is how you pronounce his name, is very, very much like you had to read The Black Cat, and then that was the next story, was a Calvin Fauché type beat. But yeah, that's a good pick for the surprise, especially because we were very, very low on him on our team preview. Once again, but we did prepare for this by saying, like, and don't be surprised if they're also all of a sudden amazing, because this is just what they do. But yeah, I am sure it will kind of fall back down to its level, but that has been good. As we mentioned, it is really nice to get off to a good start, regardless of how, you know, nebulous the teams you're facing, how bad the teams you're facing are. My surprise is how well the new rules have been working. We've had, as we mentioned, a lot of really quick games. We had our first sub 2 of the year earlier this week with Sandy Alcantara pitching not a perfect game. Wow. That would have been a lot more news, pitching the first complete game shutout of the season. Probably knowing how Sandy throws and how everybody else does now, the only complete game shutout of the season. But yeah, I mean, games are quicker. They're more action-packed. There's a lot of runs being scored in the games, and that is probably something that'll find its level as pitchers get more adjusted to everything. And just in general, I feel like pitching gets off to a slow start. Pitching takes longer to really get in the rhythm than hitting does. So, you know, I'm sure that the run environments will go down a little bit more, but the base paths have just been insane. It's just a lot of stealing. We saw it in the first series. I don't even know. I believe the Orioles went 10 for 10 on stolen bases against the Red Sox and Reese McGuire, his arm. But they have 13 steals right now. The Yankees have 11. Cleveland has 11. Arizona has 10. And just a lot of real, like, fast guys getting their opportunity to shine. You know, Corbin Carroll has 3 steals so far. I believe Gleyber Torres is tied for the league lead with 5. I can double check that. Yes, the lead right now is Gleyber Torres, Jorge Mateo, and Miles Straw. But yeah, just a lot of people really being able to show off their speed. It gives me a lot more confidence that we might see a 40-40 season soon, because we're bringing back that environment of a lot of steals, which is exciting. It's always nice to have a lot more action just on the base pass in general. So, you know, I'm hoping that we're going to get 30-30 seasons, 40-40 seasons back. I think that all in all, there are going to be its detriments. You are going to see games that may have disappointing results because of a pitch clock, or somebody struggling because they have to deal with the pitch clock. But I think all in all, it is a very, very good thing for baseball that we're seeing these work so well.
Yeah, no, it's been a really nice piece. You know, I think even some of the negatives are really not that big of a deal in the long run. And it's just something that the players have to get used to. I remember thinking, you know, there was one thing that Brandon Nimmo had said that I hadn't even thought of, was that when you get on base, you know, you putting on the oven mitt and everything, you have like a lot of pressure to do that, as fast as possible. You know, even the times that something bad has happened because of it. Again, you know, going back to the Mets, but recently they got called for a strike against Jeff McNeil because Pete Alonso wasn't on the bag in time and ready at first base or something like that, as a base runner. And then they determined that was wrong, that was the wrong call. So, you know, we're still working things out like that. We knew that we were going to have to be working things out. So it's interesting. But like you said, you know, the people are off to the races right now, and it's really cool to see. You know, you hope that, I guess, and I don't want to be the person to put this out in the air, but you hope that there isn't, you know, more injuries because people are running more and whatnot. But it's nice to see people running more. It's nice to see that element of the game back in there. The shifts actually hasn't been that crazy, I don't think. I don't think it's that crazy of a difference when you actually see, you know, Francisco Lindor playing up the middle, like maybe a foot off the bag or something like that, then you're like, oh, wait a second, this isn't that much different than what they were doing before.
Yeah, and I don't think we have much data right now to prove, like, I haven't checked the league-wide BABIP or anything like that, but I don't think we have too much data right now, especially this early in the season. I might need to give that some time to kind of regulate out. But yeah, I don't think we've seen too much as far as the shift restrictions, but stolen base environment and game time have been a clear and present change in the way that baseball is enjoyed and played.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's all welcome. I believe, you know, it's a more interesting and exciting thing to watch. As you were alluding to earlier during a practice, DJ, that the beer sales have not gotten hurt due to this shortened game. So good on the owners for being able to collect the beer revenue. But anyways, you know, it's cool. It seems like it's making a really good effort to bring this game out to everywhere. And I hate thinking that Rob Manfred is sitting up in his castle throne, glaring down and Mr. Burns and his fingers together over this.
Yeah, I kind of wonder that. That's the one thing about the game time aspect that I am wondering, and you know, I'm sure we'll go out to a ball game sometime this summer and really be able to feel it. But that is one thing I kind of wonder on how that experience will be, is like the overall live experience of getting food. Maybe it's just something where you just don't get food at the ballpark anymore, which, hey, that might be a better idea with how expensive food at a ballpark is. But, you know, we I just mentioned that the Milwaukee Brewers said that they are no longer suspending sale of beer at the seventh inning, which is something I genuinely wondered what they were going to do. Because at that point, you're only really selling it for like an hour and a half rather than the full, you know, 2.5-3 hours that you would typically get out of a regular game. But yeah, I think just overall, it's been very fun. I think that was a very good segment. Now we can just real quick, I don't think we have to go too much into it, do some Mets talk. As of recording, they're 5-4, 5-1 against the Marlins, but 0-3 against the Brewers. Everybody's on the IL. Justin Verlander hit the IL just before the beginning of the season, like literally 15 minutes before first pitch. It was a ridiculous news dump. Jose Quintana hit the IL a little bit earlier during spring training, and then Omar Narvaez is out for 2 months now. After the third Brewers game, I believe. In the Brewers series, it was just simple. The bats went quiet. Everybody on the Brewers went off, as we mentioned earlier. And some other things, Scherzer hasn't looked too incredible, and Carlos Carrasco didn't look good either. But regardless, I still think there's reasons to be positive. There's reasons to be excited. I think we've gotten a lot of people kind of picking it up lately, Francisco Lindor and Pete Alonso among them. But I kind of think it just resembles Mets baseball again, which is this is very similar looking kind of to the team that played last year.
Yep, this is exactly it. This is what we have noticed for the longest time, and everything, you know, this is how the Mets play baseball. The thing is they are showing right now that they're living and dying by Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor, which I don't want to say is okay, because obviously I don't want them dying by those two. But they are your best hitters. So you do want your best hitters to be some of the players that are going to carry you. And it does seem, the good news is it does seem like they are starting to heat up. And then you're hoping that pitching kind of comes along. You know, Verlander comes back. They were saying that it was a minor issue, that he has been throwing this whole time. Granted, it would be very Mets for this to become a Jed Lowry situation. I'm really hoping not. But also, the thing is like, it's because of the timing of this, but you knew that Scherzer and Verlander were going to spend some time on the shelf this year. You just knew it. Regardless of if it might have been a really, you know, hey, you know, Buck, my arm hurts, this would be something that if it's the playoffs, that's one of my favorite things to hear. If this was the playoffs, I would just pitch through this. You know, regardless if it's something that it's like, if this was the playoffs, you'd just pitch through. And then they would say, hey, why don't you just take a stint on the DL, or IL, sorry.
Damn, now you're canceled.
Yeah, I'm canceled, sorry. you know, why don't you take a stint on the IL and then go on from there? You know, you knew that they were going to be careful. They were already talking immediately about doing six-man rotations and doing things like that. So it's just one of those things that obviously because it happens the way and the Mets tried to news dump it the way that they did, that it becomes, well, hey, this is the Mets, you know. Hoping that, you know, you kind of see the things that I don't really like, again, is kind of jerking around Francisco Alvarez and Brett Beatty, giving you the kind of jerk-off motion of, like, oh, we need them to have at-bats and we need them to have, you know, work on their defense in Brett Beatty's case and stuff like that, which I don't think is totally fair. I think Beatty showed that he has a really good glove in spring and that he has the bat to boot. You know, so I don't know. I just don't really love how they're handling those two, especially when the Mets have shown that they need a jolt. But hopefully that jolt comes in the playing a bunch of games against the Marlins. So,
yeah, I think that I have their concerns with the Alvarez stuff. I do still kind of get it's a little bit different than the Adley situation. In that I do believe that Francisco Alvarez is still a couple years younger than Adley is. So it is something where, as a catcher, especially a catcher that's... Yeah, Adley Rutschman's 25 years old. I believe that Francisco Alvarez is younger than I am. So it is one of those things where, as a catcher, especially a catcher that's going to have to catch a rotation that has, you know, super old in these playoff aspirations, it is something that you might want to get him more into beforehand. Now, unfortunately, I guess unfortunately for him and his development as a catcher, but also very fortunate because he's going to have to catch these people. He does kind of have to, I guess, put his feet to the fire now with the Narvaez injury and really get some more regular catching reps at the big league level. We'll see how they handle that with Nito. I do think it's kind of a matter of time on the Beatty situation. He did have some inflammation on his thumb, which I didn't check to see if it was the same thumb that he had to get surgery on and ended the season last year. So I'll have to keep up with that. But if Eduardo Escobar keeps struggling, I think it's a natural conclusion that they'll just swap them eventually. So I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, I mean, if there's one positive I really want to look to, the Kodai Senga era has got off to an incredible start. He pitched really well in his start against the Marlins today. He, after a rough first inning in the first start against the Marlins, really settled down and looked really, really good. That ghost forkball is incredible.
Yeah, he's been really fun to watch. I texted you earlier today while we were watching him, and just like, it's one of those where he throws so many pitches because he strikes out so many guys. But it's just such fun to watch him pitch. His ball, it does seem like he kind of just knows where it's going, in the sense that he knows it's going towards home plate. But I think his ball,
I feel like a lot of I feel like a lot of pitchers know that the ball is going towards home plate.
That's the joke, DJ. It's more that, sure, he doesn't really know where it's going in the zone. I'm saying he has control issues. it's really interesting to watch, because the ghost fork is just such a nice pitch to see. It really made me think and made me wonder if other pitchers that are in Japan are watching this and being like, well, fuck, like, I have that pitch, you know, like, I can do this too, you know, because he can't probably be, like, I mean, the only one that has this pitch in the world, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the forkball and splitter, I know, are a lot more prominent over in Japan, and you see it with guys like Roki Sasaki, and I know that, I believe that Shohei has a splitter as well. It is a more common pitch over there, so I'm sure that people have a similar thing, but it's like, I mean, you know, a lot of people in America probably watch Clayton Kershaw's curveball and is like, well, I have a pretty good curveball, but I can't fucking do what he did. So yeah. I think it's probably just the same deal.
Yeah, I don't know, but it's really cool to watch it. You know, it's nice to see, hoping that when we get to watch him suit up against the team not named the Marlins, how he fares. I think he's going to fare fine. I think, you know, his stuff is there, and it's just been really interesting to watch. So
it's funny, because I do think his next start is probably lined up for the A's. I think he's going to miss the Padres series, so we might have to wait a little bit longer to get him against a real major league lineup. Although, the Marlins lineup still sucks. Luis Arraez aside, who's now still hitting over 500 against the Mets.
Also, very insane. It's so cool to watch that guy bat.
Oh my god.
It is so fun to watch him hit.
But also so annoying.
But it's just the ability that he has to put that bat on a ball is insane. It's so cool.
It's truly, like, genuinely incredible. Because in every hit, it's just the same. It's either, like, a seeing eye single up the middle, it's a nice line drive into right field, right in front of Starling Marte. It's one of the most insane runs I've seen. I just don't know how you get him out. I know they did it a couple times today, but I don't know how they did it. I expect him to be on first base every single time we face him, which is incredible. Looking a little bit forward, they have this next game against the Marlins and then a series against the Padres. That'll be a nice test for them early on in the season to see if they've recovered from their little mishap against the Brewers, and then another one against the A's. It's nice to kind of have a relatively easy April schedule for that sake. So, I think that just about does it for the main part. Now, we did not remember a guy last week. So I said that we would do two today, which is the case. We are going to do two in this episode. And I decided to kind of go for a theme of teammates, you know, to remember some guys that were teammates. So, Chris, given that theme, who were your guys that we're remembering today?
Yep. So I chose two teammates off of the 2008 Cubs. So first off, let me vamp a little bit while I search for the roster of that team. There are some really fun guys, like Carlos Zambrano is on that team. So I'm just doing, let's remember the 2008 Cubs here, but these are not my two guys here. Derek Lee is on there. Names like Ryan Terrio, Aramis Ramirez, Alfonso Soriano, Jim Edmonds. This was a pretty good team. You can even see some of Rich Hill there. Interesting there. Maybe a still kind of old 28-year-old Rich Hill there.
Rich Hill is probably the first active player that we could do or remember some guys on.
Definitely could. I think I was actually going to choose a spoiler alert to save it for a future year or whatever. But the person that I was geared up for last week, or last time, but we didn't get to, was Julio Teheran, because I wanted to remember a guy that's still in the league, probably. Anyways, guys for this week from the 2008 Cubs, one is a one-time All-Star, one is a zero-time All-Star.
Can I take a guess?
Yes.
Okay, so this is actually a little tough, because there's three names that I have it down to. I'm just going to guess two of them. I also
said 15 names. But...
yeah. So, I mean, I'm mainly saying this just because of the process of elimination. I don't think that you said these two. Derek Lee and Ryan Dempster.
I did say Derek Lee. I did not say Ryan Dempster. Ryan Dempster is a really good one, but neither of those players are the people that I'm going to guess. The one-time All-Star was for this year, 2008, and it's Kosuke Fukudome.
That was the third player that was on the chopping block,
mainly because his All-Star season in that year is really interesting, because his season wasn't that good when you really look at it. You know, from a perspective, he had a batting average of .258. He only hit 10 home runs. He had 12 steals, so maybe you can kind of see it there. Double digits in both categories. Only 58 RBIs. So he wasn't really kind of there. And so maybe you're wondering, oh, well, that's a prime candidate of amazing first half, bad second half, right? Well, his first half, he still only batted .279. He had 7 of his 10 home runs in that first half. So maybe that's kind of where it goes. And 8 of his 12 stolen bases. So maybe that's all where it is. But still, I don't really think that, batting, .279, having an OBP of .383 and a slug of .408 is kind of like jump off the page numbers there. So it's really funny. He got his first All-Star recommendations in that year, in his rookie year, technically, although I believe because he was an overseas player that he was an old rookie, I believe.
He was 31.
Yeah, 31. Year, yeah. So it's just an interesting player there. Do you have anything on Koske before I get to my next guy?
I am fascinated. You said that your other pick was a zero-time All-Star, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I am fascinated. He's a starter. He started that All-Star game.
Yeah, Fugudome? Yeah, it's yeah. nuts.
He started... He's.
I don't think he was good.
He started that All-Star game, and it was not a situation where everybody needed an All-Star. Like, so, in the Forgotten episode of Ball 5, my Remember Some Guys was Brian LaHare, who was the 2010 representative for the Cubs, who just needed an All-Star, and he was there. This is not that situation, because Giovanni Soto was also on that Cubs team, and he started as well. That is fascinating.
And the funniest part is, I remember knowing this guy, and maybe it was because he was, you know, an international free agent from Japan, all that stuff, and it was like, oh, watch this guy, he's great, great outfielder and stuff like that. I just couldn't believe that when I looked up this thing. I would have told you, if you would have said, hey, guess what Koske Fukudome's All-Star year was, I would have said he hit like 300 and had 25 bombs or something like that, and like 15 of them before the spring break. Or before spring break, before All-Star break there. But anyways, that's my one-time All-Star. My zero-time All-Star from this team, this 2008 Cubs, is remember a guy of Mark DeRosa. Now, the reason I said this is because of the World Baseball Classic. Because
yeah, I was going to say, decent ball player, terrible manager.
I don't even think, I would say decent is the frame of reference for him, because he really wasn't that good of a baseball player either, you know. He was I think he's literally like a replacement level player, you know. He did collect 10 WAR over his career, so I guess he's 10 wins over a replacement player for his career. You know, 100 home runs. He had 20 stolen bases in his career. He batted .268 on base of .340 and .412 slugging for his career. So it's just, again, just like a fine baseball player, nothing crazy. It's just funny, like, you know, this is the guy that is on MLB Network. This is the guy that's chosen to lead the USA roster in World Baseball Classic. It makes you wonder what the politics of this situation was, you know, especially when, like, players like Ken Griffey Jr. is on his coaching team there, so. Regardless, I just thought it was funny, so I just wanted to toss Mark DeRosa in there as my remember some guy there.
Yeah, I think that replacement level is very apt, because that is 10.6 WAR, but it is over the course of 15 or 16 seasons. And WAR is cumulative, mind you. It's not an average, so that means he gathered up to 10 WAR. His highest was a 3.6, which is about average. So mostly he was exactly a replacement level player. So, I would say that that's a good pick. A little bit more relevant than most of our Remember Some Guys because of the fact that he was just the manager. But I also understand that that's a reason to remember him. My picks, I am going to go with a pair off of the 2012 Red Sox. Maybe an all-time bad vibes Red Sox season. That was the year that they, I believe that was the 100th anniversary season for the Red Sox, so it was a big to-do, big deal, and then they went 69-93, were terrible, not a good team. This was fresh off chicken and beer. That was 2011, so this is fresh off the chicken and beer scandal as well. Just now,
can I guess before you go through, but keep going through your yes. preamble.
Yeah, this was coming off of the heels of chicken and beer, and then they just had a terrible season. Now, everything was redeemed with that 2013 season, winning the World Series and all, but this was, like, some real bad vibes Red Sox team. But it does have a couple names that I have favorited in my time as a baseball player. Chris, I'll allow you to make your guess.
All right, so I'm only saying this just because I'm keying in on these two people right when I open up this team. I'm going to say Daniel Nava and Cody Ross.
You're 1 out of 2.
Nice.
My picks were Jared Saltalamacchia and Cody Ross.
Okay.
Jared Saltalamacchia, just once again, overall, one of those guys that had a decent, you know, a decently long career. A 90 OPS plus for a catcher that caught for about 11 seasons is pretty impressive. And in general, to be a catcher that hangs around for 11 seasons, you got to be, you know, at least a little decent. But I just always loved him because his name was so damn long. And especially on his, he's not a small dude. He's 6'4", 235. So it's not like he has a small jersey to fill up, but the Texas Rangers really filled his jersey up. It's truly incredible. I don't think his Red Sox jersey was even that egregious. But if you look up, and I'm sure that we can post a video of, I mean, a photo of his jersey, but his Texas Rangers jersey is ridiculous in how it wraps around the number. So it's more name than anything on why I picked Jared Saltalamacchia. I think just overall a fine player. And then Cody Ross, Chris will probably note that I once called him in my, this is when I knew I was a sports analyst, being a sports analyst was really my thing, was when I tapped Cody Ross, who has a career high of 24 homers, as a natural power source. When I was talking about his involvement on the 2012 Red Sox. That was his only year with the Red Sox, huh?
That is wild, because I feel like he is like a Red Sox mainstay, and he played for a terrible Red Sox team.
He played for like a horrible vibes Red Sox team. I mean, I get him more for the 2010 Giants, I believe, because I want to say I made that statement while we were watching the 2010 Giants in the playoffs, and then he went to the Red Sox, and then you guys ragged on me for it, but he was not bad in that year. 115 OPS plus.
No.
Hit 22 dingers, hit 267 with an 807 OPS. Not a bad year for the roster, the natural power source.
No, I mean, it's a pretty decent looking year. I'm still shocked that he only played one year for the Red Sox. I really would have told you that he would have played like 5 years and was like a mainstay in there. That's crazy.
Yeah, so those are my two picks. If I could make maybe an addendum to the Saltalamacchia pick and pick somebody else, Nava is a good pick because he has the one great highlight of the fact that his first ever swing in MLB was a grand slam. So I think he's a good like bar trivia remember some guy. I also like what's it called? Vicente Padilla on this team. I was just listening. This podcast has now evolved into what are other baseball podcasts that DJ listens to, because I was listening to Effectively Wild and they did a their stat blast, which was revealed that Vicente Padilla had a lot of like, he would throw a 95 like a 92 mile an hour pitch and then follow it up with a 40 mile an hour curveball. So that's what I remembered him for in that season, is just following up really fast pitch, not really fast, but like fast pitches with really slow pitches. That's my remember some guy. Also Rich Hill on this 2012 Red Sox team.
Nice.
Rich Hill made one appearance for the 2012 Red Sox.
Remember some guys, Rich Hill on both teams. That's great. That's the most Rich Hill thing you could do.
We could do a remember some. We mentioned it. I just said it, but we could do a remember some guys episode on Rich Hill, just because of how long his career has been and how many teams he has been on in his time. Before we get away, I just wanted to finally give an update on the Chattanooga Lookouts Rocket City Trash Pandas game. The second leg of this doubleheader was a win for your Rocket City Trash Pandas. They one hit shutout. They made up for their mistakes against the Chattanooga Lookouts and beat them 3-0. Chattanooga only had one hit. Shout out to Reese Hines, the only Chattanooga Lookout on the entire day to record a hit.
Can I say something that might be actually the funniest part of this whole thing?
Go for it.
If you had to guess, do you know who the Rocket City Trash Pandas their major league affiliate is?
I looked this up, and I was going to mention it, that it's a tungsten arm situation, because the Rocket City Trash Pandas are the AA affiliate for the Los Angeles Angels.
That's amazing.
This is ridiculous. I'm so glad baseball's back. This is ridiculous. Chris, any parting thoughts?
Give us 5 stars. You know, we'll do the plugs at the end again. Give us 5 stars on wherever you are. I still haven't even given our podcast 5 stars, so I'm sorry. Give us 5 stars.
I haven't either. We're terrible at this.
Yeah, whatever.
We're really bad. We opened up this opening day pod talking about AA baseball, ended it talking about AA baseball, and did not promote the pod until the very end.
Well, you know, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Ball5Pod. That's 5 spelled out. That's what I got, dude.
Yeah, you took the words right out of my mouth. I hope you guys enjoy. I hope you guys continue enjoying baseball. Hopefully you take enjoyment out of this podcast. At this point, I don't even know anymore. But yeah, have a good one.